Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. I hope that classic reggae tune by Kevin MacLeod has gotten you into the mood of No Problem Man, and you are settled in your easy chair, feeling the trade winds drift softly across your face as you really chill. Because here in the backyard, we gather once a week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock to reminisce, celebrate, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. So this evening, we are going to be covering, and first of all, I want to welcome the listeners on the board and those that may be listening online, and thank you for your support. We have been airing a couple of pre-recorded shows, and we know that perhaps we have not been on live for a little while or on and off, but we're back today, and I am very excited because one of my listeners, and I don't really know her name, she sent me an email about the subject that I'm going to discuss tonight, and I hope that we'll have listeners on the board that will join in the labrish, because I have found this information really, really very enlightening. So we will have to build this week's segment as an enlightening chapter in the backyard. So if you are on my list, you will know from the promo that we are going to be talking about Jamaican free villages. And I want to really start off by reading for you what I found on Wikipedia. And you know, as I think most of the listeners might know, that Wikipedia is subscribed to by regular people like you and I who put information on. It also has, I think, software that access information that's put online by other institutions or libraries. And as you can imagine, every country in the world is getting online with their information. So I noticed when I accessed this on Wikipedia that it was updated in April of 2011. Although we are also going to talk about information that was listed in the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage by one of our historians, Olive Senior. And I want to take this opportunity at this time to recommend this book as a wonderful gift this could be a great gift for Father's Day for a father who might be a Jamaican or a Jamaican parent of, you know, children that were born in another country, because it's very well put together, and you can get a lot of information about it. So, and I also want to remind our listeners online that if you want to join the Lab Bridge, just hit 1 on your telephone. I will see a raised hand, and that will tell me that you would like to interact, and I will open up the mic and welcome you. This is the Lab Bridge, so I encourage and welcome participation. So let me start off by telling you what Wikipedia says, their description of free villages. It says here, free villages is the term used for Caribbean settlements, particularly in Jamaica. Founded in the 1830s and 1840s, independent of the control of plantation owners and other major estates. So we understand by that description that free villages in that period was independent properties, let's call it that. No, that was not under the control of the plantation, because almost all of Jamaica was, or other major estates, like perhaps government or just private estates that were not necessarily plantations. So now comes the interesting part. And as I read the documentation, I always like to sort of give what I call my sidebar and also encourage our listeners to do the same, because I find so many lessons in reading about facts that happened in the past and how we can bring it into today's life to make our lives or the lives of the next generation better. So let me just start off by Wikipedia's article. It says, pioneering the concept. Starting in the 1800s, in anticipation of emancipation from slavery, the Jamaican Baptist congregation, deacons, and ministers pioneered the Caribbean concept of free villages with the English Quaker abolish whatever it is, the people who believe in that slavery should not be a good thing. One was Joseph Sturge, Sturge. Now, many plantation owners and others in the land-owning class made it clear they would never sell land to freed slaves, but provide only tied accommodation at the rents they choose. The aim of the estate owners was to prevent free labor choice, such as movement between employers, and keep labor costs low upon abolishment of slavery. So, in other words, they had a plan. Now, to circumvent this, the predominantly African Caribbean Baptist chapels approached Baptist and Quaker contacts in England to instruct land agents in London to buy Jamaican land and hold it for establishment of free villages not controlled by the estate owners. And I would say, what a plan! That was a genius concept. For example, in 1835, using land agents and Baptist financiers in England, the African Caribbean congregation of the Reverend James Filippo, a British Baptist pastor in Jamaica, they were able to discreetly purchase land unbeknown to the plantation owners in the hills of St. Catherine Parish. Under the scheme, the land became available to the freed slaves upon emancipation by division into lots of not-for-profit rent or for full ownership and title, where they could live free from their former master's control. Filippo's success in St. Catherine further embodied him and led to the establishment of a free village in Arrocabessa later that year. I just reading that really gives me goose pimples. To know that, obviously this was an Englishman, but of course when they were early in the days preaching religion down there, they certainly weren't preaching to the plantation owners. So it's mostly the African slaves, the enslaved people, and I suppose other freed people that were involved in the congregation. But this particular minister knew that what would happen, because I suppose, you know, he was perhaps not only servicing of service to the slaves, but I'm sure he had friends that perhaps are new people who were plantation owners. So he knew just what they were thinking. And to come up with a plan to have the agents in London buy the land from the same plantation owners made me feel that perhaps if they knew at the time what was going on, they perhaps wouldn't sell it to them, because that's what they didn't want to happen. And I want to remind our listeners on the board, too, that feel free to put up your hand when you want to interact and put in your sidebar or your 2 cents or whatever value you put on your comments. But I know that they are priceless, because one thing, they will be here in the archives of in the cloud, as we can now say, forever. So even though our callers might not identify their cities or any personal information about themselves, I would hope they didn't identify where they're calling from. It just gives us an idea of our reach. But you know that whatever comments you made are here in the archives, will be in the archives, as long as the internet exists. So I think it's important, it's an important way of leaving a legacy. So I want to invite you to do that. Now, for the people listening online, I apologize that I'm not able to interact with you online. But if you call in to the radio show, then for sure, if you want to exchange with us, we'd be glad to accommodate you. So feel free to do so. And for the listeners who may come by later, you can send us a message right on the website, or you can go to our website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com, and we'd be more than happy to add you to our list, or to, you know, listen to your comment if you'd like to know about something that we did before or want to us to do something special. So I don't see any hands yet, so I'm going to go on with other examples of free villages per Wikipedia. There are many similar free villages in the Caribbean established through the work of nonconformist chapels, particularly in Jamaica. And my sidebar here, Jamaica even then was still the leaders in, you know, taking some initiative or some action. Sandy Bay, a little seaside village on the way from Lucy to Montego Bay, founded as a free village for emancipated slaves. It was a mid-1830s initiative of the congregation of the Baptist pastor, Reverend Thomas Burchell. So here we're getting different people getting involved, whose deacon had recently been Sam Sharp until he died from the cause of fighting for freedom. Today, the Free Villages playing field is named Burchell Field, Burchell, B-U-R-C-H-E-L-L, Field, after the Reverend Thomas Burchell. Now, Tri-C, the name is believed to derive from Tri and C, was also an early free village in the Brownstone area. And I'm sure that some of our listeners are familiar with these names. I know we did strange, different names in Jamaica, and I remember talking about this Tri-C. But at the time, I don't know if the documentation mentioned that it was an early free village in the Brownstone area. Another one was Buxton, B-U-X-T-O-N, and that's named after another Englishman who is Sir Thomas Fowell, F-O-W-E-L-L, Buxton, B-U-X-T-O-N. Finance being raised through the process pioneered by Reverend John Clark's Baptist Chapel with the support of Joseph Sturge, S-T-U-R-G-E. Now, Claxonville is another free village, or was, named after a Baptist, the Sturge, S-T-U-R-G-E-L-V-E-L-L-E, or Sturgeville Town. No, wait, I missed my place here. Please bear with me. Clarksville, it was named after a Thomas Clarkson. And it was also the proceeds, it tells you all who raised the money. So we don't have to go into all of that. But I do want to tell you the names of the town because I think some of our listeners can relate to them. And, of course, why they were named, the names they are called. Now, S-T-U-R-G-E-V-E-L-E, I suppose it's Sturgeville, or it says Sturge Town, 8 miles from Brownstone, and named after another Englishman. And another place was Goodwill, on the border of St. James Parish. That was arranged by a Reverend George Blythe, B-L-Y-T-H, a minister of the Scottish Missionary Society, and funded by his congregation. Now, the point I want to make here is that there were different ministers of different faiths. Some were Baptists, some were nonconformist, as they call themselves, and some were, this one was a Scottish, it didn't say a Scottish missionary society. It was in the church, and that was funded by that man's minister, and of course, I suppose that's how some of these places got their names. Now, unusual is being, UNUSUAL, is being established subject to a raft of local rules and regulations by Blythe or established with his approval. Grandville is another place, named after another Englishman who was Granville Sharp in Trelawney, and it was arranged. So these people actually were English people, apparently in England, who worked through a local minister. It was arranged through the Reverend William Nibbs, K-N-I-B-B-S, and he had a Baptist chapel. Now, Kettering, which is another place, was named after the birthplace of William Nibb, and Maddiston, I suppose it's pronounced M-A-I-D-S-T-O-N-E, that's another village, arranged through a Moravian missionary movement, where to this day, some of the inhabitants still bear the family names of the original settlers. So that's one town we know that, remember I told you, this article was posted or updated in April of this year. So I'm sure that they did some cross-checking of the documentation. So we know that there are still some people living there who have family names of the original settlers in the 1830s. And I just find that very fascinating. But one of the points I wanted to bring up as I try to connect the past to the present is the fact that, you know, there's all this thing on the race relationships and all of that. But in the midst of all evil or people who are being unkind to another people, another race of people or set of people, because there are always people of that same race that is working for good. And, you know, we should always remember that. There's always people, whether it's rich and poor, in the same class or in the same country or of the same race. So my point is, if we have enough good going, we can always override evil. Because here in the midst of all of that, all of these people who were against slavery, they were nonconformists. They knew it was wrong. And from what I gather here, some of them were not even actually in Jamaica. But they, or if they were, they worked through somebody else, because in the case of the English people, the English men that are named here, it always say that they worked through a minister on the church, of the church. But the whole movement that was named the Free Village Movement was orchestrated mostly in London and then transmitted somehow and through some actual people in Jamaica. So there again we see how when people plan and cooperate, how they can, you know, get things done. And I know that even now in our society, regardless of where we live, whether it's Jamaica or another island or some part of the world, we need to realize, each individual, one of us, that no matter how small, if we stand up for good or we speak out against something that we consider evil, even though it might be a small grain of sand, it can multiply and increase and bring more good. So I just wanted to throw that in. While I go back to my article, and I'm always asking anyone on the board that would like to join the Labrish, please put up your hand. Okay, so let me pick up. Oh, I see a raised hand, and I'm very happy about that. So I'm going to open the mic up to 718-379. So let's see who's calling in.
Yeah, this is Leigh the Brown.
Oh. Hello, Mr. Leigh. Welcome. We have not heard you for some time.
Well, here's the thing. It might be one thing to say that we always had missionaries in Jamaica. But the other thing is that the plantation owners and the big landowners didn't want any part of this idea of giving this ex-slaves, because this happened after the emancipation of slavery in 1835, these landowners were still enforcing the harsh treatment on these slaves, even though the slavery was abolished by this act in Britain already. Mm-hmm. So it was ingenious for the people in Jamaica to link up with primarily the Baptist Church in England to circumvent these landowners. They would collect money there in England and send it back to buy properties that they could, you know, cut up in lots, let's say, and sell to the freed slaves. So that's the sort of mechanics of the free village. And
I thought it was an ingenious idea.
Yes.
Because, I mean, even if the slaves had the money, the landowners wouldn't sell it to them.
Right, and they really didn't have any money because
But, I mean, even if they did, they couldn't get it.
But remember that they had to pay the landowners rent from the properties that they were working on, and sometimes they fired them if they couldn't come up with the scratch, I mean, you know, the money to pay the rent.
Right.
And it wasn't all that easy. So this was a little way out for them. And one of the first guys to acquire one of these lots I see in the research was Henry Lunan. And he was a headman in one of those big estates. And since he couldn't get any money for himself to do this, to buy up a lot, he got the money through this network of, missionaries. Right.
But the thing about it, you said the right word, network. You know, it's networking in most times and collaborating and grouping together that get things done.
Yeah, and don't forget that, I mean, just to put it in context, we all studied, or most of us studied European history, and realized that in the beginning of all of this movement, it all began in Spain, believe it or not, back in 1542.
Mm-hmm.
And the Spanish a clergyman came up with the idea that they should have some new laws. They call it the Leyes Nuevas. And they virtually eliminated, in those days when the Spanish ruled, eliminated forced labor on the indigenous people, meaning the Indians that were in all the Caribbean islands, as well as Jamaica.
Right.
So, but this didn't last too long because one thing the big landowners didn't want to do is give up their hold on people that could work the land.
Right.
So, to tie it in with the European history, at the same time the Age of Enlightenment was going on in Europe, which lasted from 1790 to 1800. So you can see in 1800 to 1835, a lot of things were happening. The American Revolution, of course, the American Declaration of Independence, U.S. Bill of Rights, and in France, the Declaration of Rights of Man. So it would seem that it would be a real humanitarian thing to free the slaves. And it did in fact happen in 1833. But, it wasn't an automatic thing. It wasn't a bed of roses. Even America didn't follow suit until 1865. Roughly 35 years after the Slavery Act was enforced.
Right. But I want to point out here that even the notes here say that one village was named after a woman, named after a knight. Annie, A-N-N-E, K-N-I-G-H-T, a female Quaker And it is seen, this is seen by Pickering and Terrell, which I suppose a writer. It's seen as a brave initiative that honored women in an active, grandeur role as reformers at a time when custom frowned on their participation in the public world.
Yes. So you see, it's all falling in line with the Enlightenment that I mentioned before, that the rights of man, which mean the, you know, men and women, was coming about along the same lines that you're talking, including,
right? But it's interesting to note that women were getting involved from those days.
Yes.
You hardly hear anything about that, you know, when we think of the newness sort of the women's movement even here in America and all of that, you know, and here we're talking about in the 1800s.
Right.
But women were against this woman. This particular woman was a Quaker.
Yeah.
And she was definitely letting the way she felt known, and she you know, helped to contribute to this free village idea.
Right.
And at a time when, you know, if it's not even popular now in some cultures, you can imagine what it was like then. And
right.
I like to point out these little nuances, because there are so many times when we read a story and we get the big picture, but we really miss the little picture. You know, the little, several small pictures that contributed to the big picture. Because I know, I like to point out, because I know how even now there are some women, I suppose there are women all over the world that are not recognized for their contribution to anything.
Right.
And in some countries it's a lot worse than it is, you know, in others. But I don't know. I always felt that, from my perspective, Jamaican women always had a confidence about them that I know when I was growing up, the women around me and in my family were never treated or felt that like they were in a different class from the men. I was exposed to that really in my face first when I came here to the United States. But I always thought that the women of the Jamaican families that I knew were quite strong. What was your take on that, Leigh?
Yeah, well, the women were always, if you want to say, I don't want to say background, but they were there, and I don't remember the year that they were allowed to vote in Jamaica, but there has been a lot of groundwork laid by people like this woman and other women in the background that spoke up and when they could, and you know, it wasn't a cakewalk that they were able to come out and shout from the treetops, because a lot of people were still against this idea of giving anything for the slaves to own on their own.
Right, right. And on the subject of women taking some initiative, I remember as I'm reading this, I remember we did a show once, I think you participated in that, where this ex-slave who had moved back, she went to London with her slave mistress, and when slavery was abolished, she went back to Jamaica because she was born there. And then she and an Englishman from Westmoreland that had a business in Westmoreland collaborated to start the Salvation Army. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
Joe?
Yeah.
I mean, and so I'm reading here about this woman, Anne Knight.
Yeah.
The female Quaker, and it just brought up memories of that particular show. So my point is, women sort of standing out and getting things done goes way back.
Right.
In our culture. Now, let me go back to the Wikipedia article here. It says, although the concept of free villages proved an immediate success and many were set up, their establishment depended partially upon success in raising money. In England, through the Baptist, the Quaker, and the Christian circles. For those who remained on the plantation estates, conditions could sometimes be harsh, so much that some left to live as best they could in the wilderness of the hills. An English Baptist minister arriving in Jamaica for the first time in 1841 described his surprise at the bleakness of the situation after emancipation. So there's excerpts of what he wrote. Acts of aggression are practiced by the overseers. Within the last few days, the tales of cruelty to which I have listened have been numerous indeed. For the people knowing how much advantage is taken of their ignorance are sure to repair to their ministers for sympathy and advice. In some cases, where the wages have been withheld for months, the people are summoned for the rent of their dwellings, which are upon the very property that they have been laboring. This is what you were talking about, Lee. Last week, from the mere caprice, A-P-R-I-C-E, of the overseer, a family on one estate was ejected out of their dwelling at a moment's notice, although their rent had been paid. They threw them out anyhow. Ain't that something?
There you go.
So, these people really did a lot at the time to establish those villages. But also, you know, our wonderful historian, Olive Senior, from the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage, has some similar information. She doesn't have the details of the names of why they were named and all of that. But I would encourage our listeners to really get a copy of this book. And, you know, it's like an encyclopedia. You take forever to read it, actually. But anytime you have an idea about something that relates to the culture, you can certainly find the information here. Because, you know, I've had this book for some time, but I knew nothing about the free villages. So I didn't get over to the FSET. I would just go research something that I had an idea or somebody suggested that I talk about. So I didn't even know it was here. You know, Leigh?
Yeah, well,
so she even has a picture, a picture on the page of Spanish Town Square in August of 1838. You know, 1st of August was always the holiday down there, and it was Emancipation Day. And the building that was, at that time, I suppose, I don't know if the capital had been moved to Kingston already, but this is a gorgeous building that all of this crowd of, you can see, you know, that they were Black people all over in the crowd here.
Strangely enough, just last weekend when I was up in Boston, there was a copy of that same book on the center table. I was rummaging through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting book. Everybody should have one in their
house. Oh, yes. Especially families whose children were born here.
Yeah, true.
really, I really find it fascinating. Now, the interesting thing about all this, and as I say, I like to talk about things that happened in the past, you know, both good and bad, and how it can help us now in the present and hopefully the future generation. And I always say on the show, which I really believe in my heart, that I hope that parts of our history, this kind of history that we didn't learn about when we were in school, that parts integrated in the current curriculum or future, you know, because I think that when the younger generation start to realize some of the sacrifices and how people got together in spite of all the hardship and get things done, then even though things might seem like they're getting moving slow or things are not getting done, instead of everybody complaining about it, if somebody comes up with an idea, a good idea, and other people can support that idea, that you can move mountains, is my point.
Yeah,
don't you agree with that, Lay?
Oh, yes, and to segue, you know, as I said, last week I was with a group from academia in Jamaica, and I asked the very question that you asked a few weeks ago, how are the young people doing? And they're doing just fine, believe it or not. And you may have seen this in the news that a young fella in Jamaica, I guess he was probably a 15, 16-year-old, got the highest grade in the SAT. In other words, the score that he got was a record. And
Yeah, I read it. Someone sent me an email.
So therefore.
Yeah, and another one of the Backyard Lavish fans attended a graduation. I think recently here in Atlanta, where I live, and there were several students. I think it was the Spelman graduation that Mrs. Obama attended, actually, but there were several students with Jamaican background or, you know, from Jamaica, and during her interaction with people there, she was hearing about other feats, and someone we mutually know, her granddaughter, who lives in New Jersey, was selected to represent, it must be the whole state, for something that is going on in Washington with the future leaders of the country.
Yeah, so bottom line, the kids are learning. Who wants to learn?
Yes.
Yeah, the
disparity there is that there are a lot that are being left, you know, out of the learning process. And that is why on Backyard Labrish, I support two main organizations, BMI, which is Benevolent Missions of Atlanta, and also the Integrity Children Fund, because they raise funds to help with the integrity is some schools in Trenchtown, which, as you know, is part of a sort of, let's call it a ghetto, where the kids don't necessarily integrate into the rest of the society well. I think the BMA helps the rural schools to get on, you know, with computer skills. They set up computer labs. I will be, both of them have occasions coming up, so I'll be featuring them with the hope that people all over the diaspora, you know, can contribute in some way. But just overall, I think that we all have something to contribute. And if we find that we even don't have our own ideas, we can support somebody else's idea. That's one of the points I wanted to tell you. That's what I learned from both Olive Senior's article in the encyclopedia, and what Wikipedia has to say is that somebody came up with the idea. You know, one person came up with the idea, or a group of people came up with the idea, and then people even from different religions supported it. So a lot of times it's support that we need to move things ahead that are positive. We can, but we should not all just stay in our corners and complain about what is not happening. But we can make something happen by supporting something we believe in.
Yes. Now, I just wanted to point out, I referred to the women being able to vote in Jamaica. I didn't remember the date. I just looked at it. It was 1944.
Oh, interesting.
Way later that they really got a their own voice, you know?
Mm-hmm. But, of course, that did not stop them from being... Politically, it did, but socially, it did not. And especially, too, if they were working with a religious organization. Because this woman, the Quaker woman...
Yeah.
It didn't say she was in Jamaica. Anyhow, she was one of the supporters. I remember that other woman I told you who helped started the Salvation Army. That was way before that.
Oh, yeah.
So even though they didn't have a vote, they didn't just sit out and complain and do nothing. They got involved in a cause, even though they did not have political voice. And it mentions here about most of the religious people. And the ministers and all of that were referred to as actually moral radicals and nonconformists. That's how they would be categorized. They were big in when it comes to morality, and they were considered radicals by like the political mainstream, considered those people radicals. So I'm sure it was not easy for them to help the way they did, but they still did it because they were coming from the heart and doing it for the cause. So that to me, you know, speaks a lot for itself. And I see someone else from 954-6963 with their hands up. I hope they want to talk to me. So I'm going to open up the mic and welcome. Welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret and Leigh. Who do I have?
This is Mickey Mailer.
Hi, Mickey. Welcome to the library. How are you tonight?
Very well, thanks. I couldn't help but chiming in when you were speaking about
We love chimes.
The strong character of Jamaican woman.
Uh-huh.
And it's a link from Africa, you know. Most of the slaves that came there were from West Africa. And if you go there into Ghana, up into the Ashanti region and all that, you'll find women are the backbone of the family.
Mm.
And they have a very good family structure.
Mm.
The men are fine. They're like chiefs and what have you, but women are the backbone. And I remember as a child, if I would go up in the country in New Market where they had that big market on Wednesdays, it was the women not even donkey. They were riding mules at the time, and you could see in their makeup, in their body language, that power. And not only that, there are demonstrations of their strength with Paul Bogle.
Right,
It was the woman there that actually started the revolution there.
Right.
And take you back to Africa, one of the wars started by the Ashanti people against the British was led by a woman.
Anna Korapan
or something like that name. So that strong character comes from Africa. And you could see it in the faces of the children, too, in Jamaica.
Right, right, right.
So that's my little input to your
show.
Well,
thank you so much for your input, and thank you for being a fan.
All right,
and, you know, as I mentioned before, we didn't learn about all these details. We might have picked up some information. But I really hope they can integrate some of this history into the curriculum for the kids growing up now. Because I think that it will ignite more pride.
Yes.
In
yes.
the it would, you know, in the children, especially those that need it most, that seem to feel hopeless about situations.
You know,
because
one writer said last week, he says, history is not only about wars.
Mm-hmm.
History is about people and things and art and music and what have you.
Right,
so
right.
It is good that this is a beautiful show. I wish a lot of people would tune in because it's very educational.
Well, thank
you so much. It will help the younger people to understand where they're coming from, their rich history that they left. You know, I wish that every child, black child in the West, could take a trip to Africa and see the rich heritage, the rich societies, the rich civilization that they came from. Free slave. And they would look up to themselves and feel a little more assured of themselves.
Right.
If they know their history.
If they know that they
were kings and queens and what have you, and that Europe borrowed these things from them, they would walk with their heads a little higher.
Right, right.
So
that's why I'm hoping, really, that, you know, more of this, more of the history will become current and taught and appreciated. Because we're getting more information now because of the Internet, you know. There is just a lot more information, and people can really find it if they want to. What I consider myself doing is just giving it a voice, because I know a lot of times people don't have the time to read. You know, I can't even see sometimes what I'm reading, but, you know, I fudge through it. But I always,
you're doing fine.
Thank you, refer to where people can get actually the accurate details.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's now, because of the richness of the communication that we have now, because of the technology, a lot of people can embrace it more. Some people are scared of it, but they need to use it, you know, to enlighten themselves. And really leave a legacy, because just in our conversation now, this will be in, as I call it now, the cloud forever.
Yes.
It will always be able to be archived. And that's why people have to be careful what they put out there, because it never goes away.
No, it never.
It really never goes away. So I really appreciate you, your
yes,
support, and
you
being
your
sidebar, as I call
right.
it. Yeah.
Nice talking with you,
and one way we can help spread the word, really, is to just, you know, introduce the link or just suggest the website or Blog Talk Radio. Because if anybody goes just on Blog Talk Radio, I'm putting Backyard Labrish, they'll get all the shows.
Yes.
That were ever done.
And it's there,
and
they can always repeat.
What? Beg your pardon?
They have repeat shows. If you go online, you could pick up
right.
one
you
of the
can
shows
get
that
it.
Past shows.
Right. You can. They're always there. And they have a capacity, I suppose, to house an endless amount.
Yes.
But we are just trying to leave our impression, and hopefully it will help. Someone will tune in and listen, and they will learn something, because here on Black Backyard Labrish, we only, my objective is to celebrate, enlighten, and to preserve our rich culture.
And with
that, you know,
say,
I don't try to commercialize.
Go back to your guest, okay? Thank you very much for letting me in.
Thank you for
okay.
joining the Lavrish.
Okay, bye.
And while you were talking there, I just found that one of the first people to start the Salvation Army in Jamaica back in 1885 was, there was a man and a woman, and this mother,
right.
Agnes.
Remember we did a show on it, Leigh?
Yeah, and Mother Agnes Foster,
who
was a former slave.
Right,
And she
returned to Jamaica. She was in England when slavery was abolished. It's a wonderful story.
So 40 years.
Yep. I would like to repeat that show because I think a lot of people might have missed it. But I was just very fascinated by, you know, even how the original Salvation Army got started. And the lesson I got there, it was a couple who was disgusted with all the Church of England snobby people would look down at the people who were a little tipsy and they came to church, the drunks and the harlots, and they would not want to associate with them because they weren't clean and they I suppose smell a liquor. Decided that he was going to take the ministry to the street. Just he and his wife started that idea, and look what it is today. There are millions of people involved, and so I would use this platform to encourage anybody that has an idea that has some grounds and is for the good of mankind to not to bury it under a rock, but to you know, talk about it and to act on it. And you don't have to know exactly where the support will come from, but the idea is that everything starts with just one or two people or a small group of people, and it can ignite or move a whole nation. Because a lot of people, I am sure that the Free Village didn't perhaps help every single freed slave, but it helped enough of them to make it an important historic event. So with that said, Mr. Leigh, do you have something else to contribute?
Well, what I read was that, you know, that first lot that was made in
Flagerville.
Yes,
uh-huh.
This past Labor Day, whenever that was, they had some celebration of these events that occurred that we were talking about, and cited certain people that were instrumental in promoting the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up plaques in remembrance of these historical events. And it is
great. And I just want to mention that the Baptist Journal was put online, and that's part of what I suppose is igniting this buzz about the villages.
Okay.
Because I would not be surprised if most Jamaicans never heard of it.
Yeah, well,
I've known of Flagerville, but I didn't know anything about its history.
Yeah.
And I want to take this opportunity to mention a young man whose website is Jamlink, and he's actually, I don't think he was born in Jamaica. I'm going to try and have him as a guest one of these days. I was hoping I'd get him for this event. But, however, his mother was from Sligoville, and he knew about the history of Sligoville. And it's him that I got some information of that even tweaked my interest more when I got the email this week about Free Villages, because he has a website and he's trying to start an initiative to do something exactly with at Sligoville. So people who may be interested, or if there are people in the diaspora from Sligoville or interested in you know, in giving back, might want to check out jamlink.com, because I think part of his objective is to start something, you know, in that part of the island.
Yeah.
So, yes, you were about to say something?
No, you know, I used to wonder, I mean, as an individual going through the country, where we got some of these really English names from.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Sligoville and some of the other ones you mentioned.
Right.
And now we know, you know.
Right. I want to point out one thing from the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage that I thought most of our article is similar to what we discussed from Wikipedia. But listen to this. It says here, Sir Charles Metcalfe, who arrived as governor in the unsettled year of 1839, in his first dispatch to London, makes an interesting commentary on the formation of the Jamaican character. Listen to what he said. The generally tranquil state of the country without any police is a strong proof of the present peaceful disposition of the inhabitants. The character, however, acquired by the people in their transition from slavery to freedom, seems to be more that of independence than of submission to the will of others. Isn't that a powerful statement?
Yeah.
That he was making about the people of Jamaica in 1839.
Yep.
I found that was very deep. And he went on to say, they are, I imagine, as independent and thriving and only a little subservient as any laboring population in the entire world. So, in other words, he was comparing them to laborers in England, in Ireland, in other parts of the world. And that is quite something to say. He was the governor.
Yeah.
And if in 1839 we could be regarded as a tranquil state, in a tranquil state, these are the things. They didn't have any police at the time. There was no chaos. There was no plundering. There was none of that going on. So if we could behave like that then, we can get some of that going on now. So we need to take a look at our past and learn from it, and in some cases adapt and duplicate some of the things that went on then. And with that said, I am going to get out of my chair. I've been quite relaxed. And really, because I was really inspired when I read that. And you know how it can get very troublesome sometimes, I suppose, as in any society. But when you think back, Leigh, for the governor, who's the head of the state, to arrive in the year of such unsettlement and find the population that he could describe like that, you know, that is a big deal.
Sure is.
So, you know, we have so much to learn from, and we have so much to be proud of, that I just encourage the people who might come on later on, and those who may not be Jamaicans, but they might just have a love of history, to find out a little bit about what happened, and even the way we feel about it now. So I really appreciate you being here with me today, Leigh. Welcome back.
It's pretty warm up here. I wish I could have a red stripe light.
And you could be on in your favorite chair. But virtually, we can take a virtual tour, a virtual trip.
Yeah, no cool breezes up here tonight.
Oh, well, you just have to remember the ones that used to caress your face in the old days.
Right.
And get back in that state of mind. So with that said, I hope to see you all next week. And I hope you enjoyed the show, and please let us know if you have something special in mind that you'd like us to discuss, because we're here each Wednesday on Blog Talk Radio. This is Backyard Libraries, and we're here every week where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. So good night, Mr. Leigh.
Good night.
And I want to thank, I see we just have a listener who has just Skyped in. Who, by the way, Leigh, what time do you have? What time is it in your city?
9:06.
Oh, I see. So we really have some more time if we want to chit-chat. I see that we have a Skyper, somebody who's just Skyped in. And if, they Skyped out. But it's not funny. I'm just being funny. Sometimes that technology don't work well sometimes, so I'm hoping they didn't just Skype out, but something happened. But do you have any ideas for next week?
Well, not off the cuff, but, if you went on the Jamaica National Heritage Trust page,
mm-hmm.
And go down some of the topics. Something might jump out,
Right, right, right. Well, I always like something that is sort of meaningful to what's happening in the times or whatever. But and I know that the Independence celebration is coming up in August, which is just like 2 months off, and there's going to be, everybody's prepping for the 50th year, which will be next year.
Yeah.
However, here, I don't try to get into politics, and you know that, I'm sure you're just like me, we know nothing much about the new Jamaica under independence, because neither of us have lived there. However, I am still interested in what is happening now and what will happen in the future. And I am hoping that the past, which a lot of people are not talking about, and I just have a love for history. And I think that I have learned, me personally, I've learned so much by just doing the shows and doing the research on the shows. So I'm really having a good time. How about you?
Me too, yes.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, I look forward to seeing you next week.
Okay.
And with that said, I want to bid everyone good night.
Good night.
All righty.